are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Welcome to the Serious Growth Podcast, where the truth will be told. On the show today, we have Joe Perry. Joe, how are you?
I'm great, Leo. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm going to ask you a really question that you probably had asked of you lots of times. Has anybody ever asked or said that your name is the same name as the guy that is in Aerosmith?
I get it all the time.
Yeah. Never, right?
Right.
I just wondered how often that happened.
That's all the time, dude.
That's the first thing that I thought.
Right?
Yeah. So your parents, did they know that there was a Joe Perry when they named you Joe Perry?
I don't think so, man. I think that was a little before their time.
All right.
Or a little after their time, I should say.
Yeah. Okay, so I see here that you're a certified personal trainer, former competitive bodybuilder with 26 years of fitness-related experience.
Right.
When did you start? Did you start, let's see, personal trainer first, bodybuilding second, or vice versa?
Actually, my first competition, I got certified right after my first competition.
Okay.
Way back when I started, first got into bodybuilding, I mean, I'd always had an interest in it going back to when I was a kid. Frank Zane was the man, you know what I mean, yeah. To me. But I never really acted on it. I was really a small kid, really skinny. I had some internal issues that I got worked out. Man, just being honest, I heard every skinny joke in the book. You know what I mean? And it just affected me.
It really affected me.
I just got to a point to where I felt like I needed some change. I felt like I needed to do something different with my life. And, once I got all these internal issues worked out, I knew that weight training was something I wanted to get into. But I just didn't want it to be a passing fad. You know, a lot of people will say, oh, I want to get into it, and it'll last for a few months. They don't see what they want to see, and then they're gone.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to be that. I wanted it to be something that would be in my life here when I'm 52 years old, you know. Yeah. And so in the beginning, it was all about reading, learning as much as I could about muscular development and continuous results. And just reading articles in magazines. And, you know, that's when I run across your article. And it just, you know, it was like a 3-page ad. And that just jumped out at me. I was like, let me really check this out. So, of course, I ordered the book and the rest is history.
So let me ask you this. When you first started, like, what was your age when you first got into? So I'm assuming that at some point you got it involved in weightlifting, correct? Is that right? So how did you start? I like to try to find out like where you started. You're giving me some of the reasons why. I think it's because of your being a skinny kid. Sounds sure. like that's a reason why you got in. But what age were you when you first started?
24.
24.
24.
So you're kind of up there. I mean, you know, you weren't.
I was athletic. I played a lot of baseball. Baseball was my thing. I was really good at it. Played 7 years of school ball and then played a lot of open league ball and stuff like that. But
yeah.
I didn't get into weight training until I was 24. And that's
so you're
I
out
really...
of college at this point then?
Yes.
Did you do any weightlifting in high school at all or anything like that?
Not a lot.
What kind of how do the coaches feel about weight training back? I mean, I'm older than you are, but still, I'm just curious. How do they feel about that, especially for baseball players? Did they want you guys in the weight room or was that just not?
Not so much.
No,
not so much. I mean, in fact, when – we've come a long way, you know, because as a personal trainer, I had a collegiate baseball player as a client. And, back then there was no emphasis put on it. You know,
I mean? Pretty interesting how far it's come. I mean, when I was doing my, of course, this is after bodybuilding got me into personal training, you know, but, even like I went to spring training with, I don't know if you remember a pitcher by the name of Michael Acosta. He pitched for the San Francisco Giants, and he was actually on their world when they were doing their World Series team. But anyway, I went back, and I was training him in his offseason. We went to spring training together. It was an eye-opener for me, Joe, because I was shocked how – this is when the Bash Brothers were coming on. You remember them, Mark McGuire and Canseco? Yeah. Remember those guys?
Yes, sir.
Well, they were sort of the oddity. And this is, gosh, this has been like 92, 93 and through there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was surprising how many of those guys weren't weight training because they thought that the weight training would ruin their, in this case, their swing, you know, muscular. And I guess, listen, I guess when you don't have enough information, sometimes it's just better not to do anything, I guess, because, you know, if you, the truth of the matter is, if you don't train an athlete correctly, you can mess up his career.
Absolutely. You
know, that's for sure. And, but I wasn't sure if that was still, you know, where you were, if that was still a thing where it's like, no, I mean, the football players, it seemed like, okay, the linemen, like when I was coming through, linemen, you go in the weight room, the quarterbacks and receivers, if we catch you in there, you got to run sprints for days. Is that, right. Kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, sports so, specific.
Yeah, sports, that's right, exactly. So when you first started, what was your, you started training weightlifting at 24. What was your, when was your first competition?
I didn't compete until I think it was around 2007. You know, and I give credit where credit's due. Your system works. I mean, it, and I have trained clients, countless clients with the same principles, adaptation, ramping, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Just being honest with you, Leo, I went from 128 pounds to around 185 pounds drug-free on your plan. And it wasn't until I decided to compete that I actually started using drugs. Mm-hmm. But I mean, everything that I've accomplished over the years, I credit you and your system.
I appreciate that. That's a big
honor. Yeah, man, it's just made me who I am today. Just the whole thing. I mean, it all just makes sense to me. I've heard you talk a lot about Mike Mentzer. I have been, incorporated some low volume, high intensity stuff. Not so much as like a one rep max or anything like that, but you know, I do train low volume, high intensity. I train way beyond failure, a couple of sets, you know, per muscle group.
Yeah. Have you had any issues with injuries?
Oh yeah. I've had some nasty ones, man. I actually tore both my Achilles tendons at the same time. I literally had to learn how to walk again.
Wow. Now, did you do that with, like, doing too many, like, too heavy calves or something?
Yeah.
Really?
I had 1,100 pounds on a leg press doing calf extensions.
Oh.
And I had actually
snap backwards? Did it snap backwards?
Huh?
Did the Achilles snap coming backwards? I mean, did you lose control? Or how did it happen?
Man, I had already done 3 sets, 8 to 10 reps, was on my very last rep. And was actually bringing them back down to rest on the locks. And on the way down, they both just popped.
Oh.
Yeah. And, you know, when I went to they took me to the ER. You know, the doctor told me, he said, if you'd have had those locks out.
Oh, man.
They both would have snapped like they did. All that weight would have come down, probably blow my hips, my knees and everything out. So.
Well, I guess.
I've had some nasty injuries, man. That's probably the worst. I tore a tricep. Tore a hamstring. I think I had mentioned to you recently, I tore a bicep back in July and nursing that.
But. Yeah, you know, I don't know. You know, I've mentioned this before with Mentzer. I got to know the guy. And I mean, he was one of the first people I met, actually. And, you know, these guys, once I got into the sport, I really wanted to make sure that I became a student of the game. Now, I wanted to know how these guys were training. So I went down there and watched them myself.
Right.
And, you know, of course, Mike's philosophy was, you know, one rep max. And these guys that did this style of training, I mean, unfortunately, it's a fact, they had some pretty bad injuries. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you're putting your body so far out there that you're risking that. You know, there's a trade-off for all this kind of stuff. And the other thing that was really interesting to me, though, is what I did find out about guys like Doreen Yates and Mike was when they were doing their, Doreen was like high intensity, the HIIT training, I think at that time, that's a terminology that they were using. And then Mike was heavy duty. But mm-hmm. one of the things I did learn about those guys, and again, maybe this was later on in their careers, I'm not really quite sure to be honest, but they were actually doing more volume than they were actually stating that time in the magazines, because you know, you and I and most of us that get into this sport, we got our face in magazines, and of course back then we didn't have that kind of social media and the access to stuff like that. It was all magazine stuff, right?
Right.
And I was just, I mean, to a degree, Joe, I was misled a little bit by the magazines, you know, asking myself, how the hell can I be that much weaker than these guys? And I had already been into this thing for a few years until I went down there. And then I started realizing that a part of what they were doing was the high intensity. But even that being said, man, these guys, they suffered some really bad injuries. Well, you know, Dorian, I mean, I think he popped the blew out his bicep, and he had some really bad injuries to the point where it's very hard for these guys to even train. So look at Ronnie Coleman.
Oh, he's a mess.
Oh, that's sad. My God. It is sad. You know, when I saw him actually walking the way he was walking, and I thought, oh my God, you know, because I was just the before and after photo of this is just, woo, it's sad.
That's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. And he's such a nice guy too, man. I've met him like two or three times. He's just the nicest guy in the world.
He really is. You know, we did a video. I don't know if you remember seeing our backstage a video that we did, Backstage Secrets to Bodybuilding. It was a video that we did. Do you remember that one?
I don't remember that.
So what I did is I got the top five guys that were competing at that time. Ronnie Coleman was one of them, and Lee Priest, and there were three more guys. And what we did is we digitized their voice and even their face if they wanted it, because what we wanted to show was the drug use in the industry as far as...
Okay, I know what you're talking about. I hadn't seen it. You did that?
Yeah. I didn't know you did that. Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah. So what we wanted to show at that particular time, it's kind of controversial because, you know, when I when I came up through the industry, we wanted to, and we did, develop a program, a training program for the natural athlete. We said that this is going to be the fastest muscle-producing program that you're going to do. In fact, people will accuse you of taking steroids. And we had that happen, actually, with quite a few people that went on the system, you know. So it was originally, it was done for that, you know. And I have to tell you, Joe, you know, it was a very difficult decision for me to make to start enhancing. But back then, you know, it was like, well, I either do that or I just stop competing or compete somewhere else. And I was too competitive for that. And I just, it was just a choice. It wasn't necessarily a good one, but it was the one that I wanted, you know. And there's always, listen, we know we're up there and long enough in the tooth that we know there's always consequences for the things that we do, no matter what. Sure. There's trade-offs, you know. Mm-hmm. And I you know, you try to understand that as much as possible. But, yeah, Ronnie, man, he was – these guys – so what we did in this video was basically – we found out that the truth of the matter was, is the amateurs in the industry were taking way more stuff than the pros were. Now, this is back in the 90s. Looking at some of the guys today, I'm not so sure if that still applies. My goodness.
Right? I know, right? Yeah. It's nuts. It's
and
nuts.
I got a feeling, I think that's the reason why that, you know, look, the sport of bodybuilding at that level is more of a cult type of industry, because you know, to the average person, they can't relate to that. But to guys like me, I just the freakiness of that thing is just, if nothing else, was just amazing to see.
Oh, I love it.
I did too. I did too. But at the same time, you know, there's a big natural movement now. You know, I just came back from the IMBA, the International, the Natural Olympia, and I have to tell you something, Joe. I mean, amazing athletes in condition. Now, I just talked to a guy before you. I did a show earlier this morning, and I said, "Well, how often are you guys getting tested?" And I tell you what, I think there's always going to be it's this cat and mouse game, you know, always, no matter how much testing that you do. But I think that this organization, the INBA, PNBA, I think they're really addressing. You know, I think they're really legit in trying to make this thing a clean sport. Is it going to be 100% clean? I can't really say. I just know that being in the industry long enough, there's always, you know, there's always guys trying to beat the system, you know?
Sure.
So you were, so you've competed, but then you're also doing personal training. Are you still doing that?
I don't do one-on-one training anymore. I have a couple of Facebook pages. Of course, my Instagram is linked to my Facebook pages. I just do online stuff. I actually work for a company here in town, and I just do it on the side. I do it for the fun of it. You know, when I first started personal training, I worked at a hardcore gym here locally called Elite Fitness, nothing but bodybuilders and powerlifters work out there. And then there's the average people. The owner, I got in good with the owner. We were good friends. She let me train under my own name, JP Fitness. And that was the fun times. Mm-hmm. She ended up selling the gym. Long story short, I moved on. I ended up going to work for a company called In Motion Fitness. And then I went to work for Gold's Gym. And, you know, it's kind of like you take, if for me, you kind of take a passion, you make a job out of it.
Yeah.
And it just took the fun out of it for me. So I couldn't, you know, it was all about, you have to do it the way we say you do it.
Oh.
That kind of thing. And it just really took the fun out of it for me. So now I do it on my own terms. You know what I mean? It's, I do it the way I want to do it. So that's kind of where I'm at now. Again, I don't do one-on-one training with clients and stuff. I do regimens, I do diet plans, stuff like that.
Yeah. And of course, you're just drawing back on your own experiences.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I was just checking out your photos behind you. Is that Lee Haney behind you? I think it's on
the I don't have Haney up here. That's Chris Cormier.
Okay. I believe that Chris Cormier was on. He was one of the five guys. No, Aaron Baker. You remember him?
Yeah.
Aaron Baker was one of the guys that were on. I forget the guys, the five guys, but it was Coleman, Lee Priest, Aaron Baker. But I thought to your left or your right, I don't know which way you turned, I thought I looked like Lee Haney right there.
That's Stan McQuay right here.
Oh, okay. I can't see very well.
Yeah, yeah. That's Stan McQuay. Of course, I've met Ronnie a few times up top here, but Lou Ferrigno.
Oh, yeah, Lou.
Me and my wife used to go to the Arnold every year.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, that's where all my autographs come
from. I wonder if you and I were at the Arnold at the same time, because I used to go, when's the last time you went to the Arnold?
It's been a few years. I think the first year we went was in – it was actually 05. I've got one of the posters on the wall. And then we went like the next 4 years.
Yeah.
Every year.
I can't think of it. Because there for a while I was doing all the events. When I was in the moment with all this, you know, these training courses, we were attending these events like that. And I went to the Arnold 1 year. As a matter of fact, at the Arnold 1 year, do you remember a guy by the name of Vince Gironda?
Yeah.
The Iron Guru?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was really fortunate to end up training in his gym. And I don't know if you ever heard the stories about Vince, but, you know, he was a character, man, to say the least. Have you heard about the stories about Vince? He was
pretty, just a few. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a,
I know he was like a guru.
Oh, he was. Yeah. And the thing about that was, what was so interesting about that is I met a guy that was actually writing for Muscle Mag or one of those magazines at the time. His name was Robert Green. Mm-hmm. And I met him on a plane ride coming home. And we started talking, and one thing leads to the other. And of course, at that time, he was living above the upstairs at Vince's gym.
In City.
Yeah, man. And I'll tell you what, that was a place that I wanted to go and train at just because of Vince being the guru. I mean, this guy, he took Arnold and he took guys that originally came in, and a lot of people don't know that, but they actually started in Vince's gym.
Oh, yeah.
Then they ship them over. They call it shipping them over the hill to Wiederland, where, you know, Joe would go ahead and market it. Vince hated that side of the sport. He was just, it grossed him out. I mean, he hated that. It was just too much hype for Vince, you know. But the thing that was crazy about Vince's was I asked Bob if I could come down there and train at the gym. He goes, yeah, we'll set this thing up. And so I go down there, and I'm at Vince's gym. It's in Studio City, North Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And before I came in, Robert says, I told him I was here. He came out and met me, and he said, hold on, I got to go ask Vince if you can train in his gym. And I'm thinking, oh, what?
Shit.
Yeah. So what the hell? Yeah, what the hell is this all about? Well, yeah. He went in, he said, yeah, Ben said he can come in. I'm thinking, well, is this the Godfather or what?
I know, right?
Seriously. Well, shit, man. I went in there, and just in a nutshell, Vince was like one of the most complicated people, Joe, that I've ever met. And maybe he was just because, you know, some of these people that are geniuses, they have this, they tick differently, I think, sometimes. I mean,
yeah.
But oh man, this was, if you can imagine this place, if I can paint a picture, it was a small place. I'm going to guess that if it was 2,000 square feet, that was it. Low ceiling, dungeon like. I don't even think
that's the way I like
it. Right? Yeah. And the equipment wasn't, some of it was wooden. I mean, it wasn't, I mean, it was just so old school.
Right.
And no music. Vince hated music in the gym. He was, he was, and no cardio. And
wow.
And of course, Vince was, I mean, the first experience, one of the first ones I had with Vince, I mean, I was kind of like shook. I mean, when I had to be asked to come in and meet the Godfather, for goodness sake.
No, right? Yeah.
But I'll never forget one time I was doing like a seated dumbbell press, and I was pretty strong. So I just moved. Vince had like he sat behind his counter. We call it the cage, behind the counter there. And at this point, he was like 75 years old. Cranky. And I go over there and move that damn bench over to the heavier weight. All I could hear, and I was so embarrassed. He said, "Put that son of a bitch back." And it was a pause. It's like everybody just, I mean, it's quiet to begin with. And everybody's kind of like, smearing their head. If you can't lift that weight, then you shouldn't be doing that weight. I mean, that was just Vince,
Wow.
But I tell you something. He is one of the guys, some people stay relative, at least for me, they stay relative forever. Vince is one of those guys, Joe, that is still relative to me to this day. Vince was really big on training. It wasn't about how much weight you could lift, but the angles in which that you train the body, because what I learned as I continue to stay in the business was that, the body becomes its function. So it's going to try to adapt to a routine. So if you're doing a tricep kickback all the time, it's going to adapt to that. And at some point you're going to hit a plateau. So Vince was just big on changing angles to the dangles, And
sure.
So much about,
I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he would say, I don't know if you know this, but Vince had actually a dancer. He came from a dancing background. If you take a look at Vince's physique, he wasn't a big guy, but aesthetically, he looked really great. You said that Zane one of the guys that you really idolized back then?
Man, he was one of my favorites. One of the things that really connected with me was the fact that he was a small guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think he won, two, maybe three Olympia titles and never broke 190 pounds.
Yeah.
That's unheard of in this day and age.
It is.
Under the 202 class. But, I mean, he's winning the big one back then at that point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I loved him, dude.
He had a beautiful physique. And, of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah. These guys. I just had Tony Pearson on the show not too long ago. Yeah, the guy was amazing. He's kind of had that same sort of body type as Frank Zane. Yeah. In fact, Zane was one of the guys that he was, that he kind of idolized too. I think if you told me that, but he had the similar physique. But yeah, these guys, what they did, man, they made up for not being big by just being super conditioned and, aesthetically beautiful. Mm-hmm. And of course, maybe you had this experience too, is that you can have your body in great condition, but if you don't know how to show it off on stage, you just sort of fall off by the wayside.
Yeah.
When you
put a lot of time into muscle presentation, if you will.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Really making sure I was posing right, showing things off the way I was supposed to, because I was never, ever going to be the biggest guy on stage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So for me, it was all about conditioning and it was all about, presenting myself.
Yeah. Who did you have work with you on that?
Nobody.
Really?
Well, I, as far as posing and stuff like that, I just watch training videos, posing videos and stuff like that.
Yeah. That's funny because that when I was coming through, there weren't any of those videos. I got some of my information from, the local place that I was training. One of their, never forget that. And I think this guy gave me some really good information. He said, look, don't get caught up in doing too many poses. Do less poses, but do them perfect.
Right.
And so, he made sure that make sure you have your mandatory poses down. Mm-hmm. And now when you were competing, were you doing was you're still at the time where you had like a 90 seconds to do a choreographed routine, or how did that work?
Yeah, it was like 90 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah. So you learned that from videos, huh?
Well, as far as videos, I learned, you know, as far as the mandatory poses and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I choreographed and put together my own routine. The only posing instructional video I had was an old VHS. I can't even remember who it was. It was from the 80s. I had actually borrowed it from a friend, and it was just about mandatory poses and stuff like that. But you know, I've been a student of the game from day one. I've never been a know-it-all. You know, there's no such thing. Even to this day, I'm still open-minded, and I'm trying to learn as much as I can about it. So I think that's what really helped me out. Was I never went into anything thinking I knew exactly what I was doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think when you do that, you really limit your potential, you know?
Yes, sir.
That happens with, you know, people, they think they know it all. Well, they don't, you know, mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know if you've been watching some of my Instagram posts. I think the ones that I'm talking about haven't even come out yet. But I came up with this, you know, are you a serious growther? And, you know, it comes down to one of the things that you're saying. You know, I said, if you want to know if you're a serious growther, or if you have this mentality, there are six principles within that serious growth creed. I call it the serious growth creed. Uh-huh. And one of them is being a student of the game. And surprisingly, there are so many of the, even these athletes that go into and go on to be pros, they're not really students of the game. I was shocked, Joe, a lot of times when I was talking to these athletes, how much they didn't know. It was amazing to me. And it just kind of blew me away. And yet the guys that were really with it were students of the game. I think that's something that is a common thread among people that are, you know, to the nth degree. You want to know everything about certain things and more than that. You know, you're always hungry for more information, right?
Right. Yeah, man.
I'm still excited.
That's what makes you better, you know?
It really does.
You know what really gets me, too, is especially in this day and age of bodybuilding, is everybody has a coach.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I kind of get that to a certain extent, man, but nobody really knows your body better than you do.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can work with people if you're sort of deficient in certain areas. You know what I mean? But I just can't imagine that. I mean, I always pride myself on doing it myself. You know what I mean? And being able to accomplish things on my own. And it's like, you know, in this day and age, it's all about teams. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I don't know if it's sign of the times and things has changed, you know, over the years, because, you know, I'm of your mindset. You know, and it's funny now that I'm this age, because I think about my dad now, he's passed on. And what's amazing to me is how much he really knew. And I thought he didn't, you know, because I was young and stupid back then. Like most of us are.
Same here.
But, you know, I think it's pretty natural. And, you know, because my dad would say, you know, it's hard to replace firsthand experience. Right. And that didn't really ring real well with me when I was younger. But now, of course, and then Albert Einstein said, you know, true knowledge is through experience. You know, you have to go through this yourself, especially if you're going to be a personal trainer helping somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That feels, you know, that you've been there and done that over and over again, you know.
Yeah.
So 26 years of training, what is your routine and what is your workout look like now? Mine's way different than it was when I was in my 40s. Even when I came back and at the age of 56, I gave it another go, and that was interesting. But boy, my training, it looks a lot different than it did when I was in my 40s. How about you? What's going on?
Absolutely. You know, when I was younger, I went balls out. You know, it was just about you know, training 6 days a week, and you know, like your program. I did the 18-week program over and over for a couple of years, and I got known by it. I mean, I was so specific about it too, man. Like, I would time my rest periods with a stopwatch. In fact, I picked up that nickname at the gym. Everybody called me Stopwatch. You know what I mean?
That's funny.
I've trained on the
6 day, 2 a days. I think now that I'm older now, it's more about recovery. You know, I train one muscle group a week. I'm not as crazy. I don't lift crazy weight like I used to. It's more about higher rep range. Just kind of give you an example. If I do chest, again, I do the low volume, high intensity. I've kind of incorporated that into, you know, the ramping and that sort of thing. I'll start out, just as an example, I'll start out with chest. Week one, I'll do maybe 4 working sets. Now, I warm up a lot more where I used to not. I just go right at it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I may do 1 or 2 warm-up sets, and then I was doing the heavy weights. So I do it with joint ailments and stuff like that. I do a lot of warming up these days. But I do 4 working sets. As an example, I'll do a flat set, incline set, and then I'll do some flies. And then 1 set I'll take to complete failure. Mm-hmm. When I say complete, I mean
nothing like
exhausting the negatives, the whole thing on like maybe a press machine where I'll just go down the stack. And once I get down, of course, I have the greatest training partner in the world and my wife, you know, and what she'll do is once I get to that point, then we'll go down maybe to 150. She'll help me pull it out and then we'll just work off the negative.
Yeah.
The second week, you know, I'll go up to 6 sets. Where I was at 8 to 10 reps the week before, I'll go up to 10 to 12. I'm decreasing my rest periods. You know, the whole ramping thing. And then into the third week, you know, I'm up to 8 sets, 13 to 15 reps, no rest between sets. I don't increase my failure sets past 2 sets.
Yeah.
Even when I'm up at 8 sets, the last 2 sets,
yeah,
that's it. I don't increase that anymore. At that point, I feel like I'm getting close to overtraining.
Yeah.
I'm starting to exhaust, and you know, the next 3 weeks, the super growth phase, you know, I'm cutting way back, I'm lifting heavy, reps are shorter, I'm incorporating the recovery into the workouts. And then I try to start my ramp, the next ramp, I'll try to start that with the weight that I left off in the super growth phase.
So,
it's the same principles, man. I hadn't changed any of that. That just, you know, all of that just makes sense to me, the whole adaptation thing.
Yeah. So, how long do your workouts last? Weight training?
30 to 45 minutes. I may be in there a little longer if I'm doing cardio, because I'll do another 20 minutes of cardio, but weight training never breaks 45 minutes.
Yeah. Never. You know, when we were putting these programs together, of course, I don't know if you know, but we did, we had a few of them, Bulgarian Burst. I don't know if you're familiar with all those training courses that we just kept writing. We're actually writing another one as we speak. It'll be coming out.
Oh yeah.
Not quite ready to talk about it yet, but yeah, we are. Be Serious Growth 5, I guess it'll be this one, or 6. Awesome. I don't know, one of those. But one of the things that we are, what we wanted to do based in the industry at that time, and maybe you know all this, but I guess I'm saying it more for the person that's listening to this, was what we realized was that people really, again, they didn't really understand exactly what they were doing in their training program. They were being intuitive to a degree. Mm-hmm. But what we found that was happening a lot of times was that people were either over or under training. And this is where we came up with that. You remember that optimal training zone that we did?
Yeah.
So that the whole point of that was, and this is what we saw, the guys that they weren't getting as much result because they kept going, breaking those. They've trained so hard for so long, they overtrain and they go out of that optimal training zone on the
top. Yeah, yeah.
And then they'd undertrain because they were like, you know, either maybe nursing an injury or something, and then they come back through that optimal training zone, they go back out the other side. Uh-huh. So what we try to do, taking physiology and the way your physiology works, and there's a certain algorithm as far as when it's going to hit a plateau. All we basically did was put all that stuff that was out there, very fractured information, and try to put that into a formula that made sense. And I think that's kind of what you're saying. And it was based on science and physiology, you know, and a lot of people don't, you know, to this day, I'm still surprised, Joe. And I'm surprised at the still people out there that are hanging around in the gym doing 2-hour workouts.
You know? It's crazy. I see it all the time.
And, you know, just because your physiology is an amazing thing, mm-hmm. it adapts to that environment and they get results. You know, even like with Tony Pearson, I asked him, because I always ask how long these guys are training. He's in the gym like way, like, you know, still an hour when he was training, not now, but when he was training, it was like an hour and a half, 2 hours. And look at the wow. physique he created. I mean, you know, that goes to show you that can be done. But in the back of my head, knowing what I've known through the years and how the physiology works and the overtraining, all the stuff that your body goes through, I keep asking myself, but what if you would have done it a different way? I wonder what kind of results you could have had.
Right.
Because, you know.
I think like that all the time. I look at a guy and I think, you know, if I know he's in there for 2 hours, but he's still got this great physique. And that's the first thing I think is,
man, yeah.
come on over here, man. Let's work with me for a little bit and let's see what we can do with this. Yeah. You know, well, it's so funny.
Yeah. And the thing about that, you know, being in this sport, especially, it makes you about half crazy. You get so set in your ways. I think, in fact, in your bio, you said you're very headstrong, you know. Uh-huh. And I think, I mean, I'm guilty as charged when it comes to that as well, because it's taking, sometimes it takes a long time for me to switch something, you know. And so it's really hard when you're dealing with somebody like that that's doing mm-hmm. it to say, hey, look, you know what, believe it or not, if you did a lot less, you'll be surprised how much more you'll get out of that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because I was one of those guys when I came back from Bulgaria, I was that guy that was doing an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever.
Right.
When they said that to me, I thought to myself, on the plane ride back, are they fucking crazy? I can't do all that in 30 to 45 seconds.
So what do you think about the whole, what do you think about being able to train again in 2 hours? I mean, what's your take on that?
I think it's a mistake.
You're
asking me to go more than 30 to 45 minutes as far as in a
workout? Well, from reading, you were saying like the Bulgarians would train six times a day.
Yeah, but they split that up over time. I mean, they were doing 20 minutes at a time. Uh-huh. And you see, here's what they said, and that made perfect sense to me. And I tested all this myself, you know, mm-hmm. and I know the world the same but different, so I take that into consideration. There's no such thing as overtraining if you don't overtrain to begin with. And this is what they said, the 30 to 45 minutes is kind of, they said, look, the truth of the matter is you could probably take this out to an hour, you know, but if you just want to make sure that you don't overtrain, for sure, mm-hmm. stay between that 30 to 45 minute mark.
I got you.
Because your body can actually recover within 5 hours, if not mm-hmm. sooner. Because there's no training, you're not overtrained to begin with. These guys were training so intense sometimes and so long that even back in those days, and again, some of the stuff is just so damn trendy that it comes and goes, and you know how that goes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some of these guys were training one body part a week, for Christ's sake, because, well, hell, they were so overtrained that it took them that long to recover. And I think you mentioned this, it's about recovering. And the truth of the matter is, you're only as good as your recovery.
Right.
And one of the lessons that I learned from Bulgaria, because I had to trust the process, otherwise I couldn't make any claims. Mm-hmm. I had to trust that process and switch from going an hour and a half or 2 hours to that 30 to 45 minute mark. Here's the lesson that I learned, and I don't know about you. It was very difficult for me to get the work in when I first started transitioning from the 2 hour workout or hour and a half workout to 30 to 45 minutes. It was very difficult, but here's what I learned. I learned that I was wasting a lot of time in the gym resting, you know, maybe too much mm-hmm. talking going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I also became more efficient in the training that I was doing. And lo and behold, all of a sudden I started doing the same amount of work very close to it in 30 to 45 minutes.
Right.
And it was amazing. I mean, it was like, for you, look, you thought it was a game changer for you. I thought it was a game changer for me. I was shocked. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, some of this, a lot of this stuff, we made it our own, but some of this, you know, the strategy came out of Bulgaria. These guys were amazing, you know?
Yeah.
And, but boy, to convert somebody, you know, to change that, and I'm talking about myself in the beginning, was, now I became, of course, I was a skeptic and still am, but I can mm-hmm. tell you that stuff really did work.
You mm-hmm. know?
And not only that, they didn't believe in warming up. I know that, you know, we, now that we're a little bit older you know.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different, but no, they said warming up is a waste of time, because based on how your physiology works, it's always trying to adapt to an environment. You know, they put it in a term that made sense to me, and they said, if your body's trying to adapt to its environment, which is innate, that's the fight or flight nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so it's going to adapt to what you teach it. If you're teaching it that it needs to warm up, then you need to warm up. You're teaching it exactly. It's going to adapt exactly to that environment, you know. And that was another thing that I did when I came back, is I transitioned where I was ready back then. I was in my 40s, and I no warm ups. There was no working set. It was just right.
Yeah, that's the way I did it back then, man. I did the one quick warm up just to kind of get some blood moving, but that was it. I went right to work.
Yeah, you know, and it's amazing how so many guys were doing. They call it back then. Maybe they still call it that. A working set. They were doing this warm up.
Yeah,
three or four warm ups before they got into the working set.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well, that's what I call it.
Yeah, and of course, I think that that's gonna you start doing a bunch of warm ups. You multiply that by how many body parts that you're training. Of course, it's gonna take you an hour and a half or 2 hours, but you're warming up a third of the time. You know,
right.
Pretty much, if not half the time. You know,
yeah.
So tell me this. So how is your, and you've told me about your training, how has your diet changed, or what are you doing with diet now?
Man, I don't get crazy with it. I'm a very picky eater. I'll say that. So a lot of things don't change. I mean, I get my carbs from specific sources, egg whites, white meat, chicken. I keep lean red meat, at least one lean red meat in my meal, in my diet a day. I get my carbs from white rice, sweet potatoes. I like grits. I eat grits before a workout with my egg whites. I don't get crazy with it. I just keep it simple.
Do you count your calories?
Only when I was competing. You know, not so much now.
No.
I kind of measure it out in cups. Half a cup of grits. I try to get at least 10 to 12 ounces of protein per meal. You know, but I don't write anything that specific down or anything like that.
So how do you, because I'm going to correlate this and compare it to what I do. How are you doing as far as your body weight is concerned? Are you where you want to be? Now, you said you were a skinny kid back then. So where's your body weight now, and what kind of shape are you in now, would you say, that way?
I feel really good to be 52 years old. I'll put it like that. I feel like I'm in really good shape. I feel good. I got good energies. I feel good. I could drop some weight because I have kind of taking some time off since the bicep tear, you know.
Yeah.
So I've kind of been splurging in my diet a little bit, but I'm back in the swing of things. I'm looking to drop about 15 to 20 pounds of body fat and just kind of maintain where I'm at right now. I feel really good.
Okay. So with that being said, 15 to 20 pounds. So how do you go about doing that? I mean, I'm going to come from the person that's still, five days a week, Joe, I measure everything. That's, we're all the same, but we're all different in that way. Mm-hmm. And whatever it takes to get the end result is what I talk about. Mm-hmm. And so how do you go about, if you're not really measuring what you're eating, how are you going to drop that 15 pounds? What's going to be your strategy? Because I think it'd be interesting for some people to hear that.
For me personally, and it works for me, my first three meals, I'll have carbs. The last three meals is just clean proteins and veggies on a 6-meal-a-day plan.
How do you monitor your intake? How do you know how much to put on your plate?
I just eyeball it, man, be honest with you. At this point, I'm just kind of eyeballing it. I have a good sense of, as far as being able to look at some protein and tell you I'm around the 10 to 12 ounce range.
Yeah.
Like with egg whites, usually it's around eight egg whites, two whole eggs, that type of thing.
Yeah.
For me, it's easier. Like I'll eat extra lean ground beef. I'll just make a patty. And again, it's just about eating maybe a half a pound.
Yeah.
Making a patty of that half a pound. Same thing with chicken. I can pretty much eyeball that. That's kind of where I'm at now. Now, back in the day, I used to measure everything.
Yeah. Well, and then with your experience, I mean, see, the difference here is you're talking about someone who has experience. Because if you're that person who is starting out and, you know, trying to start from pretty much scratch, it's difficult to use your strategy and your approach to get a result. Because you know what's going to happen with you, and I'm putting words in your mouth, but what's going to happen with you after, you know, a certain amount of time, you're going to say, well, this little amount that I've been eating, I got to cut this shit back a little bit, you know, and you're going to make that adjustment because you're watching that kind of stuff where, you know, Joe, there's so many people that have come to me over the years, because I still have this training studio that I still have a couple hundred clients that, that we work with there. And I can't tell you how many times, because I always do a consultation with them. And I always mention, because look, there's three components in my opinion that need to be manipulated: weight training, cardio, nutrition. I think nutrition is the most misunderstood. I think the weight training is the one that needs the most hands-on, in my opinion. Okay. And the nutrition side of it, people are so screwed up. They're so, there's so many misconceptions in the industry, and the industry has actually done it. I mean, they make it pretty damn confusing. I will say that, you know, and I hear people saying it all the time. I want to drop 20 pounds. And I said, well, what are you eating? I eat healthy. They almost get defensive with me. I eat healthy. Yeah. I said, okay. But maybe what you don't realize is if you eat all healthy and you're eating too much of healthy, what do you think is going to happen? But it's like, this is how, I don't know if it's brainwashed or, you know, with some of the people, but they just don't get that.
Right.
And then on top of that, you've got these plans that are out there. I call them the quick fix nutrition industry, Nutrisystems, and all these things. I have a term that I use called SOS. People have SOS, shiny object syndrome. You know, they keep looking for the next best thing. And I think the ones, and you and I, the people that have been around long enough, know there's no real magic here. There really isn't. It's, you know, you have to do a certain amount. You just, you have to have a regimen of sorts, and it is a regimen. There's a certain amount of monotony to doing this to get the result. And yet, you know, our society, I don't know about in North Carolina, but out here, we want things fast, baby, right now.
You know, that's the way I am. I want it to happen right now.
I mean, I think that's the human nature. And yet,
you know, I tried to, just like with everything else, I had to incorporate change into my diet. You know, I do carb cycling and stuff like that. I'm just really complacent where I am right now. You know, I try to keep things moderate and simple. But you know, like with carbs, I have a couple of days where I'll ramp up the carb intake, and then on Wednesday I'll peak, and then the next 2 days I'll come back down. With my carb intake. Yeah, I try to keep my protein intake around 300 grams a day. But I'm a big believer in carbohydrates, especially around the workout. Back in the day, when I would buy your aminos, you had the carb supplement. Remember the carb supplement? That really kicked it off for me. Ever since then, I don't train without, you know, some kind of carbohydrate around in my workout. Nowadays, I use Fotargo. I swear by Fotargo.
Fotargo?
Hell yeah.
How do you spell that?
V-I-T-A-R-G-O.
V-I-T-A-R-G-O. Okay.
It's V-I-T-A-R-G-O.
Yeah. And what is that?
Man, I don't train without it, Leo. It's crazy. It's a waxy maize starch carb derived from corn. And it's crazy, man. The benefits are unreal. You have to look it up, man. Just really,
I will. But what it sounds like to me is that it's high. It has a high glycemic index value. Sir. Would that be right?
Yeah. And the gastric emptying time is unbelievable, dude. It's like 70%.
Really?
I used to, as an example, I would tell people, Nutrex. Remember Nutrex, the supplement company? Yeah. They were one of the first companies to come out with it back then. Vitargo is a brand name. It's, you know, there's a lot of waxy maize starch carbs out on the market, but Vitargo is made by a guy in Sweden. But anyway, back in the day, man, he would sell it to these supplement companies. And I used to use the Nutrex brand. And basically the idea around it is to mix other things in with it, like your aminos, creatine.
Because it gets like into your system very quickly. It acts as a facilitator.
Man, it's crazy.
Is that right?
As an example, I used to tell people, man, I would drink this. I'd sip on it as an intra-workout supplement. and I'd sip on it through my workout. By the time I got done with my workout, I would finish it off, and it felt like I was so full. It felt like it was right here. You know what I mean? I was just had that full feeling. Yeah. I'd do 20 minutes of cardio. This is no shit, man. I would do 20 minutes of cardio. By the time I got done with cardio, my stomach was growling because it was empty.
No kidding.
I mean, it just, it's unbelievable how quick it pushes it into your bloodstream.
Yeah.
And so the idea is to, you know, mix other things in with it, like the aminos, creatine, and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, well, you know,
I'll train without it.
Yeah. And what we used to do with our and this is the same principle with taking a pre-workout and a post-workout, is we did it with something that was high glycemic, like Gatorade, for example.
I mix the Vitargo in with the Gatorade.
There you go. Because so, what that does, that drives it right into the cell. And you it's can crazy. Stuff. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm all about, you know, feeding the muscles. I'm all about that whole thing. I saturate my system with aminos all around my workout. I'll take them before, during, and after. I use NO stimulators. I don't use pre-workouts. I don't use anything that would speed me because I'm very sensitive to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's just some kind of nitric oxide non-stimulant that I use just to create this blood flow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't train without Vitargo.
I'm going to look that up. That's pretty interesting to me.
It's,
you know, even if I don't use it, I like to know. So as you know, over the years, there's so many different brands that come out. Yeah. I always ask people when they tell me about a supplement like you did, the first thing I say is, what's the active ingredient? The first three. Yeah. I want to know what that is, because a lot of times they just give it a sexy name like Muscle Milk. You remember that, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, and then when you take a look at the ingredients, like, oh shit, that's nothing breakthrough on this. You know what you're telling me, basically. And again, I haven't heard of Vitargo, but what you're telling me as far as the way it works in your system, it's very high glycemic. It gets in and it gets out. You know, type thing. You know, one of the things I learned.
I used it to carb load for every competition.
So how did
three dads? Go ahead.
I was going to say, how did you keep it from going through too fast? I mean, at some point, you want your carbs to stay in a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you how I did. I learned a lesson, and I'm just curious to know if that is that even a consideration for you, or just
it's not. I only say it's not because I'm feeding after my workout. I'm getting another meal in.
So you get
shortly after my workout.
Yeah,
and I'm drinking an amino supplement right after my workout.
Yeah.
So it's just about feeding. Like I said, I'm all about muscle feeding. So.
Yeah. Let me tell you something that I learned I wrote a book called with Dr. You remember Mauro Di Pasquale?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The anabolic diet. Do you remember that? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I was the guinea pig on that deal. I reached out tomorrow, way back then. I saw an ad in the magazine, like you did with me, and I had to get a hold of him. When I want to get a hold of somebody, Joe, it's pretty hard for me not to get a hold of you if I want to get a hold of you. I'll tell you that right now.
Right?
Yeah, I get a little hell bit. It's like the only thing I can think about. Anyway, another story. So I got a hold of Mauro, and we connected together, and we wrote the anabolic diet together. And most people don't know that story, but I was that person in that book that we wrote that actually did that. Mauro was the genius behind the scenes. The guy was amazing. He still is. The guy was brilliant, man. So we came up with this high-fat diet. And low-carb, high-fat, we did that Monday through Friday. And then on the weekend, we would carb load. And I actually did that diet for 5 years. In the latter part of my career, I was using that diet. I got my best result. You know, again, we all have our own way of doing it. But I was doing this diet to where and you heard of the Atkins diet. So it wasn't zero carbs like Atkins, and Atkins did it where you did 7 days a week. And it was, we made a modification. Mauro did this based on how the physiology works. For example, when you eat 30 grams of carbs or less, you probably know this, your body will switch metabolism. You have two different metabolisms within your body, the free fatty acid, the fat metabolism, and the glucose. Most people are on a glucose. It takes 3 days of eating 30 grams or less. Your body switches. Now it switches the way it burns calories. Instead of burning carbs first, it starts burning fat first. Okay. This system, think of it like two different ports in your body. One's a glucose port, one's a free fatty acid port. They call that the Krebs cycle. Well, both of those ports are not open at the same time. One is either open or the other. It has to do with the carbohydrate intake that you're doing. So Mauro knew that if you had your carbs at 30 grams, that within 3 days, your body would flip the metabolism. So at that point, now your body's burning fat. So what I did was I would eat that Monday through Friday, because on the weekends is when most people socialize. So we try to make it user-friendly.
Sure.
And on the weekend, we carb load. We hardly take any protein in, because in 2 days' time, it's not going to really make a difference. And in 2 days' time, because it takes 3 days for your body to flip, even though I was flooding my body with all these carbohydrates, I was still in a fat metabolism. And the whole point of that was to increase a temporary stress to the body. When you stress the body temporarily, whether it be weight training, you know, with high intensity or it's intense, or with diet, your body secretes natural growth hormone. And that was the purpose that we did that in part, you know. But I guess I tell long stories. I just can't just learn how to tell a shorter story. But the point that I'm trying to make here is with the carbohydrates is that I would feel so lethargic on those 2 days. I mean, Joe, to the point, and I really increased my calories on the weekend. I was eating like 6,000 calories during the week. Uh-huh. And on the weekend, I'd eat 20,000 calories over the weekend, primarily carbs. Well, when I was first doing that, because of the glycemic index value, I was getting so much sugar in my body that it has that effect on you. You get lethargic.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the ways that we learned, that I learned how to control that, was adding fat to my carb load. Because what fat does, and this is the reason why I was asking you about, now I'm getting to the point of the story. See how long it took? I'm just so full of shit. It's ridiculous. But what happened then is when I started adding fat to all those, that the sugar that was roaming around in my body, making me lethargic, the fat, what is one of its purposes is to soak up the carbohydrate. And when it does that, it slows the release of the sugar into your body. All of a sudden, it becomes a really very good complex carbohydrate. So you can take a high glycemic sugar like you have, and if you wanted to slow that release for any reason at all, add fat to that when you're taking that drink. It changes the whole thing, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I almost couldn't take it, Joe. I mean, on the weekends, all I could do was eat and sleep.
I know, right?
I was like I was drug induced. It's like that sugar. Yeah. That's a hangover, you know, from drinking too much.
So through the week, what is your fat sources? I mean, where's your fat coming from?
Saturated, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, red meat with fat, not lean. Wow. Because Mauro said, again.
And you're keeping your carbs around 30 grams, you
30
said?
Grams. And I have to tell you something, Joe, to be quite honest with you, I'm on a glucose-based diet now. I am.
And you stay in lean on that, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because you're not a product of what you eat. You have to understand and learn how to use macros. You know, you have to understand how the physiology works. So when you understand that 30 grams, when you're in a free fatty acid metabolism, the body is using primarily fat as energy. And people say, well, how can you have energy when you need carbs? And I said, well, see, here's the thing that most people don't understand. Fat is a better source of energy for burning fuel, but you have to be in that metabolism. If you're in a glucose metabolism and eating a lot of fat, you have it's a whole different effect, because you're still in glucose metabolism. In other words, your body is burning sugar and carbohydrates before it's burning fat. But when you're burning fat as the main source, what about like the energy thing? I said the only part of your body that needs sugar is your brain stem, and it doesn't need a lot. And your body can convert, there's a carbon and protein that it can convert and go take care of the old brainstem. So all that stuff, see, this is the kind of stuff that we're all misled at some point, because I didn't know that.
Right.
But I just found it fascinating that, you know, I guess the moral of the story is that if you learn how each macro works, then you start learning how to make them the best use with one another.
Right.
And that's the lesson that I learned. And I learned something else. I don't know if you know this. I had 3 strokes about 8 years ago.
I read something. I've seen your videos. Yeah.
It's like, what the hell? Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was worse about that is that when I was in the hospital, the doctors, they took all these damn tests, you know, every test that you could possibly get. They said, I said, well, so how did this happen? I was jacked up. I was paralyzed and had a hard time talking. And they said, we don't know. You shouldn't be here. That was almost worse information. But that led me on an adventure, because I needed to find out why. Uh-huh. And I have to tell you something, Joe. This goes back to now learning how to make your diet work for you. So I went in. At some point, I got a hernia, believe it or not. Not because of the weight training that I did over the years. It's because I was trying to rehab. I rehabbed myself. I didn't go to a physical therapist. I had enough. I just...
After the strokes.
Yeah. I just thought, what? Hell, I've been doing this. I know, a lot about nutrition, probably more than most doctors and these guys and training. I just took that stance. And I said, I'm going to do it myself. After I came back, I did go to one appointment with the physical therapist. And it was obvious to me that they wanted to get me back to functional, and I wanted to get myself back to 100%, which I did. Mm-hmm. So we were on different courses to begin with. That's the reason why I decided to do this, But so I get this damn hernia from rehabbing, no weights. My wife had to help me move my body. It's one of the hardest things I've ever done, Joe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, fast forward, I go to the doctor about 6 months later, and I'm starting to get back to the gym now after 4 months, and I'm starting to make improvements. And I had this damn hernia. They said, well, you need to get it fixed, but you don't want to go under anesthesia until you do a cardiac, they call it a cardiac clearance test. And they check all your, your carotid artery, every artery in your body, your heart, blah, blah, blah. Because if you're under anesthesia and you've had this and you have like a small hole in your heart, for example, because it's not that uncommon for people to have holes in their small little holes. They said, if the anesthesia gets in there, you could have another stroke. You're at risk. So I said, well, hell, I don't want that to happen for sure. So I went and got this thing done, Joe. When they did all this testing, they said that overall, and I'm 56 or 59 at this point, okay? They said, overall, you're 35% blocked. And I said, oh my God, that sounds horrible. And they said, no, we don't even start stenting or doing medication until 70% blockage. If you can believe that. And I thought, that doesn't sit really well with me. So here's what I did. And that next year, because I was training the whole time after I got done, once about that, at the 3 or 4 month mark, I was already starting in the gym pretty good. And I decided for 1 year to start intermittent fasting and to combine my macros in a certain way throughout the week. Joe, I went back a year later. And the doctor said, remarkably, you have reversed heart disease by 15%. All I did was change the way that I ate. And that's a testament to how powerful your diet can be for you. If you understand how to use those macros.
Right.
But who in the hell has time to learn that stuff unless you've been around it for as long as you and I have been,
Well, they need people like you.
Well, and funny that you said that. And here's the thing, here's the bullshit that really irritated me. So I have this information. I wrote a book called 3 Strokes in 3 Weeks. I have these doctors that are on my book that said, what he did with his diet changed this. Joe, I reached out to the AMA, American Medical Association. I reached out to them and I said, on my dime, I'll come talk to your people because I have a story to tell. And I think it's pretty, the doctors told me back then, they said, 3 strokes in 3 weeks, you're a miracle that you made it. Because usually, a lot of times it's one takes people out. I had 3 in 3 weeks and I made it back. And Joe, not one person wanted me to come to any of their conferences to talk about this. And I hate to tell you that, but it's the truth. So I'm thinking, I'm a skeptic. I'm thinking, why? Why wouldn't they? And then it's kind of like in the nutrition industry. Back in those days with Morrow, he said the reason why carbohydrates, this is back in the 90s, they're pushing the RDA, the people that are recommending what we should eat. He says there's reasons a lot of times for the stuff that they're doing. It's because of power and money. There's so much money being made in the way food is being processed. Mm-hmm. They push this agenda. And I'm thinking, no way.
But you don't want to believe that.
But. You don't, but it's true. Okay, so then that leads me to believe, why in the hell do these guys want me to come talk to them about a success stories? You know why? Because I'm going to take money out of that industry. And I hate to say that, but what else is
it? That's the truth, man. Yeah.
What else is it? Why wouldn't they? Yeah. It was mind-blowing to me, really shocking, but I think that's just kind of the way it is. I would, you know, only 10% of the people make a almost 100% recovery. So I was able to talk to stroke recovery groups all over the place, you know, and there were some common reasons as to why, but boy, there's a, you know, in these industries, Joe, you, if you believe everything that you read or hear, you're in for a world of disappointment, I think. And that's the reason I've always told people, you got to be responsible for your own recovery. And I don't know, you know, I don't know what questions to ask. It doesn't matter. You better figure that shit out, or you're going to live with the consequence.
Yeah.
You know, it changed me on a level that, you know, I don't like to get too, you know, about this stuff, but maybe it happened for some kind of a reason, because it changed me. You know,
yeah, man, I'm over here thinking that. I mean, there's a reason why. Yeah, there's a reason behind that.
I don't know why, but I tell you what.
Well, I know why. You're a great voice. You're very knowledgeable in this area, and you, just your whole persona is, fuck what they think. This is the truth. You know, there needs to be more people like that out there. I think that's one of the reasons why I cling to you in the beginning, is because you were kind of putting stuff out there that nobody else was talking about.
Yeah.
And just following you here recently, I know that's the kind of person you are. So, and that's the kind of person that I am. So.
Yeah. And I'm really interested. There is part of the reason why I got back out there again is because, you know, there's the industry. Look, how am I relative anymore? You know, that's a question. I think it's important that we ask ourselves certain questions.
Sure.
And my question to me was, how am I relative and how can I make a difference now at my age? And I said, then it's like, okay, use your knowledge and your experience. And when I came out and started reading, you know, like on Google News and some of these experts that are out there, I said, these guys are full of shit. And I'm not saying they all are, but most of them are, in my opinion. And I'm going to just be that guy that comes out and talks straight, and I'll take heat for it. And I'm okay with that, because I took it back in those days in the 90s. Man, I can't tell you how much white male that I used to get, Joe. It's pretty scary. People that
really,
you know, you hit a nerve, you know,
when you
come out and are saying stuff that's counterintuitive. Kind of popular. There's a we talked about consequences and price to pay. Well, that was one of them, man. There's some freaky people out there.
Yeah,
they were saying some stupid shit, you know. But I appreciate what you're saying, and I'm always interested, especially the you know, I'm calling in my Instagram post. I'm calling out for all the serious growthers that are out there. I'm going to talk to you guys, you know, because you guys have a story. I really am honored when I hear there's some people like yourselves that, you know, follow the program, and you know that it works because you follow the damn program.
Yeah, you know, just all made sense to me. I was really fortunate to land it, so to speak, at the beginning of my journey. I learned so much from you right out of the gate, you know, and the thing with me is I'm very open-minded. I try to listen to everybody's point of view. I try to listen to everything, and then I try to figure out what works and what doesn't.
Yeah,
I feel like I was really fortunate in the beginning to, you know, stumble upon your book and, you know, everything that you taught me in the beginning. I mean, it really changed my life for the better, dude. I can't even tell you.
I'm astounded, man. I really am when I hear this. You know, when I came back out to the Natural Olympia in Vegas, that was the first event that I've gone to in years and years. You know, but getting back in, my first way back in was to do this podcasting, you know, to reconnect with people and in different walks of life and serious growthers. I just wanted to get a feel for what's going on. And then the event, it was amazing how many people still knew about the training courses. I thought, oh my goodness, you know how humbling that is? It's hugely humbling. I mean,
it has to be, man, but you know, it never left me. It just all made sense to me. Why would I give it up?
Yeah.
It's so funny, man, because just a couple of weeks ago, you know, when I commented on one of your videos with Platts, I'm laying in bed, man. I'm on my phone and I'm thinking, well, let me look up Leo. Let me see if Leo's on Instagram. So it was in that moment, I put your name in and there you popped up. You know, I went to your page, immediately followed. I didn't even look at anything else. I just hit the follow. And it's, you know, I started scrolling down and that's when I seen the video of you and Platts. And I ordered those VHS tapes back in the day. Man. I had them, dude. I used to get up on the weekends. I would get up. That's the first thing I would do was throw one of those videos in. It was so inspiring to me. And I bet you I've watched them videos. I wish I had them now. I don't know where they are now, but
I probably watched them 500 times.
Oh, man.
So when I seen that video clip, I had to comment. You know what I mean? I had to write something.
Yeah.
Here we are. So it's.
Well, I have to tell you a real quick story before we get off. You know, training with Platts is a scary situation. I have to tell you. Oh, my God. You know, I've never been afraid to go to the gym before, Joe. You know, right? Not really. I mean, Vince scared me a little bit. But yeah, yeah. Platts, I mean, he took it to a whole nother level. You know,
he's a maniac, huh?
Ooh. All the shit right? that you heard about him, it is true.
It's true, huh?
It is true. Man, when I go into the gym, it's like I had to prepare for war and hope that I made it out of there. You know? Right? And
that's
good stuff. And that's one of the things that brings me back to I'm going back to the old days, you know, the golden era, I'm calling it. You know? Yeah. When you went into the gym, you went to work out, and
damn right.
There's very few guys that are doing that anymore compared to like what it was. It's just the way it is. You know, whether they want to hear it or not.
It's funny you say that because to this day, I'm all about the hardcore old school vibe. You know, I trained at some gyms here in locally. Of course, I trained at Gold's. I worked at Gold's. But I'm all about the old school gyms. Yeah. I actually trained, I don't know if you ever heard of his name. His name's Joel Elliott. He competed back in the early 90s. Got to the NPC level. He was a wrestler. He wrestled for NWA, which turned out to be WCW. Anyway, he's got a gym here locally, and it's just – it's all old school equipment, Nautilus stuff, chain-driven stuff. You know, man, that's what I like.
There you go.
I mean, I love that old school shit. You know what I mean?
There you go.
That's where you get shit done, you know?
That's right. That's right. I agree. I have people, you know, my facility, it's personal training. Most of the clients that are there are for fitness and health. You know, I have a few people that come through. I used to train athletes in the off season when I was more in there. I'm not training anymore in there other than myself and a couple of clients. But oftentimes I'll hear, because I'm more old school that way. You know, I don't have the fancy equipment. I have functional equipment, the shit that works. And I hear people say, well, if you have these new style treadmills. I said, well, there's a place over about two blocks away that you can go to. I'm sounding like Vince, for fuck's sake. Right? You know,
there's a Planet Fitness down the street.
Yeah, just go down that way, you know.
Right.
I don't want that shit here, you know. Right. The funny thing was, and then I get in my head, I'm thinking all kinds of mean things. I'm thinking to myself, okay, you know what, you're saying that, but not even if I had the fanciest equipment here would that change the way you need to look. You have to do the work, and most people just don't want to, Joe. Sure. And with that being said, I'm going to leave it there with you. And I got to tell you, man, I mean this from the bottom of my little heart. I really appreciate you coming on this show. I'm so happy that you guys are still out there. And I told you I'm going to be in North Carolina here in May. And I would love to meet you in person. I'm glad that I did here on our podcast. But
yes, sir.
Man, I really appreciate you being there and supporting us over the years. That means a lot, Joe.
Yeah, Leo, listen, that's all humbling to me. But you changed my life, dude. I mean, you changed my direction. I credit you for anything that I've accomplished over the past 26 years, dude. Yeah, I mean, right out of the gate, like I said, right out of the gate, you know, I was looking to learn. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to learn everything I could about this, not just the sport, but just – physical development. And you know, when I stumbled upon your book, I gravitated to that, and just you as a personality. I mean, you were the first person that made an impact on me, and to this day I still swear by that book and those principles. I am so honored to be talking to you right now. I can't even tell you.
Well, we both have that in common, man, seriously. And I do appreciate that. And when I go out to North Carolina, I'll make sure, because we're on Instagram.
We'll stay in touch, man.
Yeah, I'll let you know. But in the meantime, like I close out my Instagram posts, I always say, until next time, Joe, go get serious growth. All right?
Got it, man.
All right.
Nice talking to you. Thanks for everything, man.
No,
thanks for
thank
everything.
You. Thank you.
All right.
Talk to you again. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.